The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Today we're joined by Tom Hosey. Tom's a signatory to AE 9/11 Truth's petition calling for a new investigation into the destruction of the Twin Towers and World Trade Center 7 on September 11th. He's retired now, but formerly he was a relocation consultant who was active in the Twin Towers around September 11th, and he's got a very interesting story to tell us. He's going to be sharing it here tonight on the show. Tom, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Good to be here.
So before we get into your story, I want to provide some background for our audience. You were a relocation consultant. Can you tell us what this job entailed?
Yeah, well, basically, I had for years been involved with several different moving companies as an estimator, progressing from household moving to commercial and office relocations. I had worked with different companies, North American Van Lines, Allied, Atlas. The moving profession is kind of, there's a lot of turnover between companies and the larger company, the locals and the larger ones. It's kind of an incestuous relationship. They could be working for somebody like Allied one time and a couple of years later switch over to North American or something. But I got to the point where I had enough contacts within the industry to know the good companies who could handle certain types of jobs, and made enough contacts on the outside, corporations and building managers, and decided to kind of head off on my own, become a consultant, and package the services that would be needed to relocate offices either within buildings or within a city or even out of state, and kind of orchestrate the whole situation. I handle things for Revlon, General Motors, Whitney Family Holding Company, the setting up of the Center for Physics, the American Center for Physics down in College Park, Maryland, various things. But I did do quite a lot of work when I became a consultant for Waterhouse Securities, which was Larry Waterhouse, who started out with offices coast to coast, one in L.A. and one in New York. It then became offices all over the country. Waterhouse Securities was, Larry Waterhouse sold out to Toronto Dominion Bank, which then it became TD Waterhouse, which later became and merged with Ameritrade and became TD Ameritrade. So there's a little history there. As far as the trade towers and 9/11, there are, I don't know, so many different facets of things that were going on actually before 9/11, which, I don't know, looking back, if you just put the pieces of the puzzle together, you could get a pretty good picture of what really may have went down on that day, and went down, no pun intended.
Right, and I think a lot of people from that time period now look back at things. I mean, nobody was looking, they weren't as vigilant back then, thinking that something could be amiss, you could actually probably get away with a heck of a lot more during those times because people were a lot more trusting and a little bit more focused on whatever their day-to-day activities were. So just to clarify, what your job entailed, and as it was described to me, was that if a company needs to move, that is no easy task. They need help doing that. You were consulting for the move from one office to another.
Yeah, I would go in to survey what furniture and equipment they had, what had to be taken down as far as partitions, computer setups, figure out how much manpower was needed at each location, how many trucks, what the access to the buildings was like, how many dollies, how much masonite, how much preparation would have to be done, how much pre-packing would have to be done, and kind of orchestrate the whole thing, set it up and run it. And on larger jobs, it always seemed that there was something that would kind of throw a monkey wrench into it. For example, when the offices for the what became the American Center for Physics, when they went, I think it was Khrushchev who came into town that day because they were over by where the UN was, and things were shut down for a while. And then on, I believe it was a Wednesday, the plans were to move the accounting department. And everybody, they just said, no, we can't move the accounting department on that day because nobody's going to get paid at the end of the week. So, you know, it's like, okay, put the ball down and let's come up with another plan to keep this thing going. So, you know, it was always pretty interesting.
That sounds like a headache. Good God. But obviously you are an expert at it. You did very well at it. Now, let's get to your story about September 11th, and I'll just let you tell it your way. Share with your audience what you have shared with people here.
Okay. I really don't know where to start on it, but I will go back to thinking about it. I recall that before I got the call to move some mainframe computers out of the towers because over the weekend they were going to shut down the power at the whole complex. Supposedly they were putting in a new security system. About 2 weeks or so before that, I recollect I was in the offices of T.D. Waterhouse, at the facilities manager, for some other job that was going on. I think it was over in Jersey City. And I remember them asking me, did I see the helicopter that was circling around the trade towers, which was a definite no-no because that was a whole no-fly zone. And, you know, this is something that I didn't see myself, but people I worked with did see, and they were asking questions about it. Later on down the line, looking into it, there was a group called the Gelatin Group that were Israeli art students that took out one of the windows on the top of one of the towers and put a little wooden patio, and that's what they were filming from the helicopter. Following that up, I found that they were living on the top floor of one of the towers with construction passes for some art project they were doing. But, you know, needless to say, as you just said before, people weren't as vigilant as to what was really possibly going on. I got a call, it was the week before, early in the week, about moving out some mainframe computers to, I think it was, some went to Jersey City, I think a couple went to Philadelphia, and one or two went to a facility in Homedale, New Jersey, that T.D. Waterhouse had. The reason for the move was the powering down and their necessity to keep their trading floor going. I had questioned them. I said, didn't I put a couple of computers in there just a couple of months before for you? And they said, yeah, that's just, you know, one of the floors was involved. There were two floors that they were coming out of, and they were about, as I recall, they were about maybe five or six stories apart. when I would do work on multiple floors and buildings, in order to keep track of what was going on, rather than waiting for the elevator, I'd call the guys on one floor and just tell them to chalk open the door of the fire escape, and I could run back and forth between the floors. Well, the first time going down the fire escape, on the which was on the interior part of the building, on the towers, I heard a lot of noise. It was definitely jackhammers, and being curious, I pushed on the door, which usually those doors are locked closed. Well, the door opened, and it was one of the floors, and there were quite a few floors in the trade towers that were totally empty. They were just concrete right out to the windows, no walls or anything. And on the interior part of the wall of the building, further down to my left, there were several workers kind of suspended and hanging on the interior wall, and dust was flying, and the jackhammers were there. A couple other fellows were on the standing on the ground, and they were in blue jumpsuits, as I recall. And somebody else was walking by, an older fellow, from what I could tell from the other ones who were down there doing whatever work they were doing. And I said, what the heck's going on here? Sounds like you're taking the building apart. And he kind of spun around. I believe he had just jeans on and like a work shirt. And he said, with a definite accent, "Who are you? What are you doing here? This is a security zone. Get the hell out." I said, "Well, it sounds like you're taking the building apart." His answer was, "We're putting in cabling for the new tenants. Now get the hell out of here." Which I went, okay, I've never seen any work like that going on when they're doing an office build-out or running cable when everything's totally empty in an area. So I kind of pushed it aside and let it sit. And the next week, when everything kind of turned to dust, I looked back and I went, wow, what the heck was really going on? Along with that, some of the background information is there was a moving company for a few years that was located in Jersey City at the base of the Holland Tunnel. It was Moishe's Moving. I had a friend who gave a lot of work to, because he had good equipment, good manpower, and could get the jobs done. And he had previously, when handled work for Prudential and moved the Prudential over into the new Prudential Tower that was built in Jersey City, and Prudential had put record storage in with this Moishe's Moving. Moishe's was basically a household mover with a terrible reputation. They started overcharging, they'd lowball the estimates to get the work, and if people weren't going to pay, they'd just close up the truck and bring it back and put it in storage. And he went to get a look at the record storage that was put in for Prudential, and he said, gee, the place is like a fortress. And you could see from the outside, it was all behind a concertina wire. They had TV cameras up on the buildings. I had never been inside myself, but he said when he went in, he was given one man on his left and one man on his right, and he was marched to where the records were kept in storage. That's all he could see, and escorted out. And I guess in talking to them, he said to me, he said, "Did you know, Tom?" He said, "All these guys working there are ex-Israeli paratroopers." Yeah. But that was kind of interesting. Prior to 9/11, the facilities manager for the TD Waterhouse had asked me a question, too. He says, "Tom, you know what's going on over in the trade towers? Moishe has trucks there all the time, in the towers and at Building 7 and in the complex." And I said, "No, I really don't know what's going on, but..." When I was there the week before, They had a couple of trucks in the loading dock for the towers. Now, those loading docks, when you entered in after the first bombing, they had put in a, it looked like a big cylinder with spikes on the top, so nothing could go down the ramp to the basement of the buildings. When we would go in with a truck, everybody, all the men would have to come out of the truck. They had to show their union cards, photo ID. The trucks would be opened up. They'd get a look at what's in them. They'd check underneath them. The big cylinder with the spikes on it would roll down. The truck would go down and then be stopped at the guard gate. At the guard gate, all the men out, they would check all the ID, photostat everything, and again, union cards. And Moishe's was not a union shop. But then from there, you drive down, and the loading facilities handled both buildings. The elevators came down from one building and from the other building into that whole area. Tractor trailers come in back into the area. And the elevators there, you could unload an entire tractor trailer into the elevators. They were huge. The thing that I didn't get was Moishe's being a non-union company and having trucks there. After what I was asked by the facilities director at Waterhouse, it kind of piqued my I just kind of wanted to know who they were doing work for. So I went over to the truck. There was somebody there in a blue jumpsuit, and I questioned him as to, hey, who are you doing work for here? The answer was, none of your business. We're doing interior work. Okay, you don't want to tell me? I didn't think that much of it at the time. But the trucks were not being loaded or unloaded. The truck was just sitting there. There was also one of their trucks stopped, I believe, by the Holland Tunnel, and another one, which I heard it through, I think it was like a day or two later, we went to maybe it was that evening, to a pizza place we would go to. I'll give them a shout out, Pietro's Pizza. And in the booth behind us were some police from the Nassau County Bomb Squad, who were directed, and what they were doing all that day was checking out the Midtown Tunnel for bombs and taking wire ties and everything and shutting everything down. And when I had mentioned to them something about, over the weekend that there was a power pull to the buildings, they were like incredulous. They said, no, that could never happen. So I think that they were just, it's like, okay, guys, don't go to the site where the buildings collapsed, because maybe you're going to see something that you think was suspicious. But let's put you inside the Midtown Tunnel doing some work and mix up some spotted paint. So.
Well, I think it's eerie, your comment to this person who kind of tried to usher you away and was very rude, to say the least. But it's kind of eerie that you said it sounds like you're taking the building apart, and the building literally was taken apart a week later. Now, if I was somebody in a position of authority to investigate, I certainly would have wanted to hear your story after September 11th. So I have a two-part question here for you. Did you tell other people about this either before or after the event took place? When I say other people, I mean family, friends, people you trusted. And then part B, did you go to the authorities and try to talk to them about this?
No. I didn't go to authorities, but I did talk to a lot of people about it. Some of the people I mentioned it to would say, you better keep your mouth shut. You might be in big trouble. So, but yeah, that's looking back, I don't know. I think the whole thing, there was a lot of cover up of a lot of information going on. I had a friend wasn't really a friend. It was just a very casual acquaintance of a fellow who was into heavy hauling. And he got a contract to haul some of the steel out and deliver it to the piers, or possibly even if they wanted some of it to go to the landfill at Fresh Kills in Staten Island. He said, you know, Tom, I don't understand. He says, they're just pulling the pieces out and putting them on the flatbeds. He says, some of it might be oversized, but he said, but the thing that's really weird is every truck that leaves gets an escort to the pier, and before we leave, they put a GPS tracking device on the tractor and the trailer. So, I mean, you could look at it as a crime scene cleanup, and the dust was one of the first things that was removed from that area. About 2 days after, I was going again to 100 Wall Street from Brooklyn, went through the tunnel, and as I got through the tunnel, I just followed the one-way signs, and I knew where I was going to wind up from where I was being directed. And somebody told me that they moved a lot of the one-way signs around to keep traffic away from the area. Well, I wound up right where the eyewash stations were, where if you looked right in front of me, you'd see that iconic picture of the exoskeleton of the tower sitting up. And then promptly questioned, where are your papers, where are you going, who are you, at gunpoint. And you know, I told them where I was going. I guess they made a phone call and everything checked out. And they said, how do you get in here? I said, well, you better change those one-way signs because it brings you right here.
When did you start to put two and two together? Like, as you were watching September 11th, did you immediately go back to that moment where you were ushered out?
Definitely. Also, on September 11th, we got a call from my niece in Dallas. She was already at work, and she said, turn on the TV, a plane hit the World Trade Towers. Well, we put on the television, and we were watching for a while. The second plane hit, and later on that day, after the towers came down, and as you know, it around was it later in the afternoon, about 4:30, 5 o'clock, Building 7 came down. Most of the television transmissions were off the antennas that were on the trade towers. There was one, I forget which station it was, that transmitted out of New Jersey, so we could pick that up during the day from where we were. We lived in a house barge on the out on Long Island, in Freeport, and it was two stories high. I could climb up onto. I had a ladder that went up to the roof, and you could stand up there and just watch the smoke and everything after they collapsed, and even before when they were hit, you could almost make out the towers. I was maybe about 25 miles away, 23 miles away. Well, on that one station that was still operative, when they made the announcement that Building 7 had collapsed, and this was a BBC reporter, a woman, and I said to my wife, I said, what do you mean Building 7 collapsed? That's Building 7 right behind her head. And with that, all of a sudden, the audio feed started to get garbled, and the whole picture, just all the pixels, it went into pixels and it went away. It's like somebody pulled the plug. And as it turned out, the announcement was made, I believe it was something like 20 minutes or a half hour before Building 7 actually came down. Now, BBC lost the footage. The only time they lost footage of coverage, and unfortunately, or for them, unfortunately, I guess a lot of people had been taping what was going on, so that footage still existed.
Yeah, well, I mean, luckily this got exposed, and a lot of people are very aware of Jane Stanley reporting Building 7 collapsed 20 minutes before it happened and the fact that they lost the feed. I want to thank you for sharing the story, and I just want to say to our audience, we're very interested in hearing the accounts of people who were there on the scene, who may have been around the towers at that time, who may have had interactions like the one that Tom is describing here. And we want to hear your stories. Maybe you don't want to be known that you are the one giving the information to us. I protect people. I don't disclose their identities unless they're willing to be. Tom's willing to come on the show today. But we can still use the information even if you want to stay anonymous. So if you have information, even things that were a little bit off, you were suspicious about at that time, please contact us. We'll want to hear your story. Every little bit of information is helpful. Tom, thank you so much for signing that petition and for coming on 9/11 Freefall today.
Yeah, thank you for letting me tell my story. I feel a little better of just getting it out there.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. Have a great week. Good luck.